It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and today's show is about something I discovered just in the last couple of years, which is about as much fun as any outdoor activity I've ever tried. It's single-track mountain biking, and it has become a huge in Anchorage with the construction of trails on the hillside and at Kincaid Park. Single-track means these are narrow trails, and they're built through the woods with lots of sudden hills and tight turns. Riding requires total concentration, and doing it well takes a lot of skill. And now, more trails are under construction. My two guests today are two of the folks who have made single-track biking happen in town. I've had with me Lee Bowling. Lee, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
And Janice Tower, also a biker, also one of the founders of the Single Track Advocacy Group.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks.
Thanks for being with me. So we've got the trails at Hillside. Lee, how many miles up there? And then we've got the new trails at Kincaid just built in the last few years, and you're building some more new trails at Kincaid?
Yeah, that's right. So in 2008, we built 8 miles of single track in Hillside. And then 2011, we built 9 miles in Kincaid. And that's the 9 miles in Kincaid right now we kind of call phase one. And this phase two that we're going to do, hopefully start construction here around July 15th, is about 6 miles of new trail. And it's all on the north side of Kincaid Park.
And Kincaid Park is like 1,000 acres or something, so it's not a huge area of land. Mm-hmm. But you managed to fit all these miles of trail in there. And I guess you do that because the trails are like spaghetti, right? I mean, you could fit 10 miles of spaghetti into a bowl, right? And that's kind of what you're doing.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty challenging, actually, out in Kincaid because I've said this a lot of different times, but there's so many different user groups out there. You know, you have the Nordic Ski Association, which is, you know, the main player out there, and they already have all their Nordic ski trails out there. And then you have the archery group, you have disc golf, you got the biathletes, you got the soccer fields too. So it's really trying to find the best alignment to get into these kind of virgin areas of the park, so to speak, in between the ski trails and in between everything else, and then making the best route through that safely and crossing ski trails at the right spots.
Mm-hmm. Now, for the uninitiated, what is the attraction of a single track trail? What makes it, I mentioned a little bit that it's kind of wilder than just a regular dirt road. But I mean, it's just more fun, right?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of think of single track as a kind of a roller coaster through the woods, you know, and you're very intimately there on the trail. It's not this wide ski trail. It's narrow, and you're really just having a blast going through there.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how more else to describe it, except you just got to try it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like powder skiing, but you're on a trail.
Like powder skiing compared to groom skiing. Yeah. Well, it struck me that you had to really be thinking, you know, whereas a lot of times when you're biking, your mind is wandering and you're just pedaling. But when you're riding these single track trails, you're thinking every minute because you got to keep your balance and you got to be thinking about that next turn and how you're going to bank it and how you're going to get around it. And I seem to fall off my bike just about every time I go out there.
That's true, yep. Yeah, you really have to concentrate on it. It's a great way to relieve stress. You know, after a hard day's work, you get out there and you forget about everything. Mm-hmm. You're just focused right on that piece of trail and the flow and, you know, biking it the best you can.
Yeah. So, Janice, back in about 2004, you were involved in kind of getting this whole thing started. And I guess I've seen you guys have a website, and are you just sort of a loosely affiliated group, or are you a corporation, or your advocacy group? Sounds kind of
ad hoc. Official.
Yeah.
Well, we before Single Track Advocates came along, there was no organized group or entity which represented the sport of mountain biking, and back in 2004, we were pretty much largely just individual users out there, you know, in onesies and twosies on our bikes, going through the woods, having our own little private fun. And, you know, again, there was really nothing that would ever compel us to come together as a user group until in 2004, there were some issues having to do with trail maintenance out in far north by Centennial Park. Some improvements that mountain bikers didn't particularly enjoy seeing. So
was it some of where the Nordic ski group is like widening trails for the racing and stuff, and or what
right
what pers- yeah
yeah you know, with the ski trails, they, because of racing and what have you, the ski trails were needing to be widened in certain areas, certainly not in others where, you know, the classic skiing, for mm-hmm. example, would be more prevalent. But and also because our climate is changing and we're experiencing lower snowfalls, well, maybe not last year,
yeah.
but certainly we've been observing a trend in lower snowfall throughout the Anchorage Bowl. It's better for the ski trails in terms of early access in wintertime if you have a very smooth surface.
Mm-hmm.
So the Nordic Skiing Association really wanted to kind of smooth out these trails that had been experiencing some erosion over the years and heavy use by other trail users in summertime. So, but the bikers didn't like that because, you know, bikers like bumps and roots and jumps and stuff like that, a mm-hmm. little subtle terrain texture, if you will.
If it's just like a, if it's just like a dirt country road, it's just not that much fun. It's more like what we're talking about. It's just, I mean, it's still fun. It's still exercise, but it's not like this thing we're talking about a minute ago where
right.
you're kind of concentrating on what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mountain biking is very three-dimensional.
Yeah. There you go.
So anyway, I think the mountain bikers realize that, you know, if they want to have a say in how parks are managed and maintained, then they need to come together and participate and mm-hmm. offer solutions, offer help. And what we really realize that the kind of trails that mountain bikers enjoy really aren't suitable for ski trails. So we set out to actually learn what is involved in building a sustainable mountain biking trail. So we partnered with Alaska Trails, who brought up the International Mountain Bicycling Association to teach us.
Oh, wow.
And so that summer of 2005, we built Brown Bear Trail, and we built it by hand. And it took us 3 months to go barely 1 mile.
Uh-huh.
So we decided, okay, if we ever do this again, we're not going to do it by hand.
Yeah, I know what that's like.
Yeah, so that's kind of how we got started.
You got a good workout, a lot of upper body. Huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So... yeah, that's how we got started, and we just gradually built from there, and now we're our own 501c3 nonprofit
okay.
organization.
So when you want to build a trail in a city park, you presumably have to get a bunch of permits and do a lot of planning and do a lot of stuff in advance to get everybody to kind of sign off on it. You can't just go out there with a chainsaw and get started.
Correct. Yeah, we want to make sure that we do everything above board the proper way. And that takes a lot of time, a lot of groundwork, a lot of consensus building, just a lot of pre-planning. And Lee and I pretty much agree that the real work happens in the planning process.
And, yeah, I want to talk about that a little bit later about how you plan these spaghetti-like trails, because it seems like it's just the planning how it's going to work would be a huge challenge. But sticking for a minute on getting the user groups coordinated, something I've noticed is, as an avid skier, is that the existence of the single track out at Kincaid has actually really enhanced the skiing experience, because the wintertime runners are now have somewhere to run that doesn't ruin the grooming. And for skiers, runners on the groomed ski trail is quite a bummer. I mean, it really can even be dangerous. But now you see lots of winter runners on the single track. Sometimes you guys seem to even have your single track groomed before the ski trails are groomed. There's lots of bikers out there enjoying it. And so it's kind of taking some pressure off the ski trails. And I don't know if that was part of your original thought, but it certainly seems to have resolved some of the user conflicts that were there previously.
Yeah, well, when Lee first approached me with this concept of putting single track out at Kincaid, I kind of thought maybe he was a little, a real dreamer.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a little naive.
Yeah, I thought, oh boy, you know, this is never going to fly, you know, because the Skiing Association really protects this resource, and rightfully so. And I thought that, well, why would they ever want to bring in a bunch of renegade mountain bikers into their park? But, and, you know, perhaps Lee can explain a little better, really what there were, what was happening out there in the park were a lot of little problems that we weren't necessarily aware of. And by planning and bringing in trails like this, we ended up solving a lot of problems and maybe alleviating.
Yeah, I can add a little bit there. You know, when I first came to Janice and said, hey, I want to build trails out there, you know, she pretty much said I was crazy, but she'd help me out.
Yeah.
And, I
want to build, you know, I want to do something with the crown jewels, right?
Exactly. You know, yeah.
Have some fun with them. Yeah.
So, but she, she was my guide and together we made it happen. But the first thing we did was, you know, we sat down with some of the people with NSAA. So some of the old timers there. So like Jim Burkholder and some other people. And, kind of ran the idea past them. And it was really Jim that really nailed it. He said, you know, the Jodhpur parking lot is an underutilized parking lot. And there's historically been a lot of, you know, vandalism there and a lot of, you know, bad stuff that goes on there. So the plan was if we could kind of incorporate that parking lot, we could bring more users to that lot. Mm-hmm. And there, whenever you have more people there, it's a safer spot.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also talked about, you know, walking on the ski trails, and we kind of came up with the idea that, yeah, you know, this will really, instead of bringing people to the ski trails and having them walk on the ski trails, now it's pulling them off the ski trails. And this was kind of the theory that we had, you know, when we were kind of selling this idea at the very beginning. We didn't know if it was going to work or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they were built, I mean, that's really what everyone's seeing. I mean, Diane Moxness called me up and told me exactly
she's
what
she's
you're
the
saying.
Director of the Ski Association. I guess it's retiring, but yeah,
that's correct. So the executive director there, and so
they're delighted. Yeah,
yeah, they're really excited that it's, you know, pulling people off. The groomers are noticing a big difference, and so when we went back for, you know, this past year for phase two of Kincaid, they were pretty excited that this could be, you know, another place on the north side where it could pull more people off the ski trails,
mm-hmm.
more walkers, that is.
And you do have to cross the trails now and then, but it's pretty limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the topography at Kincaid, it must be absolute perfect for this, because you've got all these little bumps and hills and turns, and even though I've been skiing those trails pretty much my entire life, I feel like if you drop me down there at random, I would instantly know where I was. When I get on these single track trails, I have no idea where I am. And how do you do that? How do you design a trail that goes through this familiar terrain where there's already a ton of stuff there, and it feels like you're out in the woods and you're not seeing anything else, and you know it all works? Is there somebody, an expert, who comes and mastermind, or do you just have to go figure it out?
Yes, I guess that'd be me. I'm right. The guy out there in Carhartts and tromping through the Devil's Club with my GPS and a map.
Mm-hmm.
And what I look for when I'm out there is I want to minimize ski crossings, number one. So mm-hmm. the less crossings we have, the better. And then if there's going to be a crossing, let's cross where there's good sight lines. Then also at the tops of hills. So mm-hmm. when you cross at the top of a hill, if a skier is skiing, they are under their own power, you know, so they're going slower. And if a biker or walker is going uphill as well, you know, they're under their own power, so they're going slow. So everyone's going slow at that spot.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, crossing at the tops of hills. So pretty much what you try and figure out is, okay, where are the best crossings? And then once you figure out the best crossings, how do I make some real loops that make sense that minimize the number of crossings that we're going to do? So it's kind of this, I'm a kind of a mathematician and engineer, so I love, you know, crunching those numbers and figuring out the best way to go around. So, you know, it was really fun for me to have this kind of puzzle. And so you have this map and this puzzle, and you just start going at it and figuring out the best routes.
So where do you get a base map that is detailed enough to do that? I mean, the USGS maps would probably just show a few contour lines for the whole park, right?
Yeah. You know, we were really lucky. The municipality of Anchorage, the Parks and Rec Division, they really helped us out there. So Holly Spoth-Torres and Maeve Nevins there. And, you know, they had really good mapping of the area. They had all the existing, you know, Nordic trails. And then they also had 4-foot contour map.
Oh, wow.
So that really helped out. 4-foot contour map is great. So, so you just kind of use those mapping, you know, things, and you go for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, our topic today is single track bike trails. Two folks from the single track advocacy group, Lee Bowling, whose voice you just heard, and Janice Tower are here, and we're talking about the new trails I think we could still call them new at Kincaid. There's another miles more of trails to be built this summer at Kincaid. There's also trails at Hillside. And single track is just a way to get out in the woods on your bike and challenge yourself. Not just do the easy thing, but really extend yourself as a cyclist. Show is Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Woolforth, and we have resources about our topic and stuff you might want to check out on our website. Go to alaskapublic.org, click on today's show. And we also try to share with listeners and hear what you have to say and answer your questions on our Facebook site. Just go to Facebook and type in Outdoor Explorer and we'll pop right up. Janice, you have worked with teaching mountain biking to kids. And Lee and I were talking about this a little bit before the show. It seems like mountain biking is one of those sports where you're just expected to know how to do it. But I've found doing these single track trails that, I really don't know how to do it. As I said, I'm always falling off the bike, or I come to a steep uphill and I find that I have to get off the bike to make it the rest of the way up, or I'm charging down and hit a tight turn and barely make it. And then there's other aspects of it that I want to talk about later. I have no idea. You know, there's these logs out there that obviously are for doing something. I don't know what you do with them. But how do you teach mountain biking to kids? And what is the process for learning to do this sport?
Well, you really hit the nail on the head. It's harder to learn any kind of sport as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of not intuitive to us. The balance is kind of funny. We naturally have this fear factor of falling.
Yeah.
But kids don't. You know, they're not afraid to fall. They're not afraid to take chances. And it's definitely easier to learn as a kid, but not impossible to learn as an adult. I mean, I learned as an adult, and it took me a long time to learn skills. But kids just seem to pick it up naturally. We have a mountain biking group called Mighty Bikes that I started in the year 2000. And we initially started with 10 kids. And now we've got 250 kids in the program, and with a lot that would like to get in, but we can't, unfortunately, take everybody just because of capacity issues. But we, you know, kids, they do well in groups of kids. They mm-hmm. challenge each other. They rise to the occasion. They have so much fun that they don't even know that they're working hard. And, you know, there's something really natural about a child on a bike. There's just a lot of joy there. You can see it written all over their faces.
The sense of freedom that they get.
Sense of freedom, sense of accomplishment. And when you get a group of kids together, they really egg each other on and, you know, strive to excel even harder than they would, say, if they were out riding with their parent. So it's a great medium for kids to get out and get some exercise, to get some balance skills, you know, learn something about themselves to, you know, if you work hard that they can get up the hill. And if they don't get up the hill this time, they know they can next time. So it's just very, very challenging for them. And, you know, and by getting kids involved, they, you know, just learn to grow up healthier and will stay active the rest of their lives.
So tell me about how your Mighty Bikes is structured. Is it like a certain number of days a week? And is it like you have volunteers teaching, or how does that work?
It's all volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
I patterned the organization after the Alyeska Mighty Mites.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, originally it was a program for Alyeska Ski Club children as a way to stay in shape during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Between snowfalls. And originally it was just open to ski club kids, and then gradually we started opening up to the general public. So it's two nights a week. Tuesdays we're at Kincaid, Thursdays we're on the Hillside trails, so the kids get an opportunity to ride both trail systems. We've got about 45 volunteer coaches.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of adults volunteering their time to teach twice a week. We'll start next week, as a matter of fact, and go through mid-August.
Is there a fee for being involved?
Yeah, it's a nominal fee. Uh-huh. It's $50 for the whole
summer,
which is about 8 weeks of mountain biking twice a night.
That's really cheap. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. There's so many great groups in Anchorage doing this kind of thing, the Junior Nordic and what you're doing and the Mighty Mites you mentioned. And it's great. I mean, that's probably why we have so many active people here is we're bringing up the young ones. So what are some skills that a good mountain biker has mastered? I mean, what are the things that... the key things that you want to be able to be good at to say you're have some ability in this sport?
Well, just general navigation.
Yeah, and don't get lost. Okay.
Don't get lost.
Sometimes that's the funnest part.
Right. Yeah. Exploration. Definitely. Pretty much just basic skills of riding in a straight line, learning how to avoid what you're trying to avoid, mm-hmm. Ascending, going up a hill, and descending. Just basic mastery of
being in control. Basically.
Being in control, definitely number one. Not bombing down the hills out of control. Basic gear shifting, knowing when to shift. How to use both the front and the rear brake without causing yourself to go over the front of the handlebars, mm-hmm. or without causing your rear tire to skid, which creates erosion, which is an issue for some of the single track mm-hmm. out there.
But what I see, like, expert people are really good at this. They don't look like me, right? I'm just sort of inching my way through carefully, and they're like doing these whoop doo whoops and like flying in the air and doing I guess they've just done a lot more of it till they're comfortable with that. But it seems like there's, and maybe you want to chime in on this, Lee. I mean, what are the skills that you develop that are sort of more advanced skills when you are sort of getting, you've done it long enough and you can do some of these extraordinary things you see people doing?
Yeah, I think for me, everything hinges on balance. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a balance type sport. It's kind of finesse sport. And, balance, on your bike when you're standing still, like if you can track stand, grab both your brakes and get on your bike and stay there in one spot, and you can maybe do some bunny hops to stay in one spot. That's kind of a key kind of skill when you're at that higher level. And that helps out for doing those log rides because you mm-hmm. can ride up on a very skinny log.
So let's tell people what we're talking about with the logs.
So a log ride is kind of a log that's already out there that's been kind of cut in half long ways and then set up so that it's it can be anywhere from 6 inches off the ground to 2 feet off the ground. And you can ride up. This is kind of like a miniature bridge that's maybe about, anywhere from 12 inches wide to about 8 inches wide. And you can go and then go off. And it's a great challenge because you have to focus. You have to balance on this log and you got to ride it. And right all the way.
It's terrifying.
It is terrifying. So you got to work your way up. One way to practice that is just to pick a line in a parking lot on a road, mm-hmm. or a white line, and just try and stay on that line. And once you get that, you can kind of work up to a smaller log ride, and then you got to be prepared to step off the log if you don't make it.
I noticed you made some of them pretty high.
Yep, there are some high. We have to keep them below 3 feet. That's uh-huh. that's the key. So all of them are below 3 feet. There's different levels of a challenge there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and there's different levels of challenge on your trails you've built too. There's one called the Toilet Bowl, mm-hmm. which you must have had a lot of fun building that, where it just goes way down into this sort of narrow, I don't know what you call it, it's almost like a hole, and then it sort of works its way up, and you really have to keep your speed up in order to make it out of that thing, and also watch some very tight turns.
Yep, yeah, you have to learn about cornering, how do you position your bike and really make those corners without slowing down too much. That's a good skill right there. Mm-hmm. Then at the very end, there's a jump that you can hit too. So, balance in the air is a very key thing, and I think that's just something that you learn the more you do it. You start off with something small, and then you kind of work your way up.
Yeah, I think as a general rule of thumb, you always want to look where you want to go. Never look at what you're trying to avoid, because that's what you're going to hit. If uh-huh. it's a rock or the middle of the turn or whatever, always keep your chin up and looking ahead. So if you're going around one of these bank turns, like in Toilet Bowl, don't just look at the, look at the exit of the turn. Look to where you want your your bike to be tracking. But also look with your whole head, not just with your eyes, you know, moving your eyes side to side, because your bike will turn wherever your head turns.
Mm-hmm.
Your head turns your shoulder, turns your torso, turns your bike.
Yeah.
So just kind of a little tip for your listeners out there is look where you want to go and turn your head in the direction where you want to go.
And to add on top of that, you know, positioning your hands and your elbows over your handlebars with them not tucked in but spread out, like you're giving your going to give your handlebars a hug type of thing, that really helps you, you know, really move your bike around. You want to kind of a strong stance on your bike.
So when you're riding these trails, what kind of speed? Are you really going fast or are you, I mean, I would like to hear from both of you, because it seems like there's a balance there between you want to keep moving, you don't want to bog down. You also don't want to like go flying off the side of the trail or run into a moose or another biker or something. And, you know, how do you decide how fast you're going to go? And I guess as you get better at it, you can go faster and be confident. Lee?
Yeah, I mean, you know, different skill levels will go at different speeds for their skill level. For me personally, I bike under control. So whatever speed I feel that I'm in control at, that's what I go at. That can be pretty fast, but, you know, I'm always conscious too of when there's areas where there's poor visibility or blind corners. A blind corner is a corner that you can't see around.
Mm-hmm.
And so in areas like that, you know, I slow down to make sure that if there is a moose on the other side, I can stop quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's another biker coming the other way or another person walking on the trail, I can stop mm-hmm. as well. So it's really about kind of gauging it. You know, you have sight distances to worry about mm-hmm. and then visibility. And then just your, you know, how technical you are and skilled you are on your bike too.
Yeah.
All kind of goes into how fast you can safely travel, I guess.
Yeah. And in the second half of the show, I want to talk a little bit about racing too. I know that you've done some racing, Janice. I'm enjoying this. This is a great topic. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about single track trails in Anchorage. I've got two guests with me, Lee Bowling and Janice Tower. They're both with the Single Track Advocacy Group. We're going to be talking more about this topic in the second half of the show, but right now it's time for the Outdoor Explorer calendar. The Kenai River Festival is this Friday, June 7th through Saturday, June 9th. At Saldatna Creek Park in downtown Saldatna. Each year, the Kenai Watershed Forum strives to organize this free community festival to celebrate the Kenai River by coordinating activities that focus on keeping the river healthy and productive for generations to come. There'll be a run for the river, 5K or 10-mile race, rock out for the river concerts, kids' zone activities, and an Alaskan artisans market. For more info, go to kenaiwatershed.org. If you're thinking about a trip to Valdez, there will be a field sketching workshop at Prince William Community College, June 14th through 16th. Students will draw on the long tradition of documenting observations about the natural world in a sketchbook. Much of the course will occur in the field, exploring the flora and fauna in the Prince William Sound area. Register online at uaonline.alaska.edu, as space is limited. On June 15th in Talkeetna, you can take an Introduction to Map and Compass class. Using USGS topo maps, students will become familiar with map symbols, contour lines, and route finding techniques. Compasses will be used to take bearings, learning magnetic north, and adjusting for declination. For more info, go to talkeetnachamber.org. That's a good one for getting out of your comfort zone with your technology and learning how it's supposed to be done with the manual techniques. And we'll have links to all these events at alaskapublic.org. To post your event on alaskapublic.org, just click on Community Calendar. Finally, Potter Marsh Discovery Day is this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the Potter Marsh Boardwalk. To tell us a little bit more about it, we have Elizabeth Manning from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with us by phone. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Charles.
Well, thanks for being with us. And I was just driving by Potter Marsh, and indeed the birds are coming back, and the grass is starting to turn green. We went from winter to summer overnight. So sounds like good timing for your event. So tell me what you're what are you doing? How are you getting people involved in Potter Marsh?
Well, this is our sixth year of our event. It started off as a grand opening for the boardwalk back in 2008, and it just has turned into a very fun annual event. We have a day on Friday that we invite camp kids out, and then Saturday is open for the general public. And we have lots of partners who come out and have lots of activities for families to enjoy and explore the marsh on Saturday.
So what kind of activities will people be doing?
There'll be birding stations. People will learn sort of basic birding and how to use binoculars. Anchorage Waterways will be out teaching people how to look for macroinvertebrates and identify different macroinvertebrates. The zoo will be out there. They usually have some of their educational animals out there, and they'll be teaching people about learning about wildlife identification and tracking skills. We have archery out on the there's an old airstrip out there, which a lot of people don't realize. There's a big grassy area out adjacent to one of the boardwalks. And then also on that airstrip we have fishing practice, so people can learn spin casting and hopefully fly fishing too.
Oh, neat. So is there any fee involved in doing this?
No, it's a completely free event. It's put on by Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife Service, the Alaska Zoo, Parks and Recreation, a lot of partner agencies. And the idea is just to introduce more people to the marsh so that they know that it's there for them to enjoy and so that they can explore it in a little bit more detail.
Neat. So this is Saturday from 11 to 4, and where should people park? I would think that might be an issue with not too much parking down there.
Parking is always a little bit of a challenge, so we do encourage people to carpool if possible. But they can go ahead and pull in, and then we usually have, this year on Saturday, we're going to have the youth employment with the parks kids out helping us. So they will direct you. There's a little grassy area where people can park, and they help kind of pack the cars in. So you can usually park there, and then it's just a short walk from there down to the parking lot area and the boardwalks.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me, it may seem obvious, but why is Potter Marsh so special? What makes it a unique asset for Anchorage?
Well, I think what's so neat about it is, first of all, it's a great gathering place for birds in particular, but also other wildlife. And it's just right on the edge of the city. It's right as you are leaving Anchorage, headed down to Girdwood. So it's always just a great stop for people to get out and stretch their legs. And just for people who live in Anchorage, it's someplace really close to go and visit. I remember when my kids were little, we used to just drive down there when they, you know, needed a nap sometimes. And it's just so close and a great place to get out and go walk and stretch your legs. And a lot of people who come to our event say, you know, they didn't realize it was there and they never thought to stop before. And once they do, they realize just how accessible it is. It's very safe and easy for folks, and there's a lot to explore.
And I guess for a beginning birdwatcher, it's a pretty easy place to start.
Yeah, it's a great place to start, and on Saturday we'll have a lot of experienced folks out there helping you identify birds and teaching people a little bit about basic bird identification.
All right, great. So that is Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. At the Potter Marsh Boardwalk at the south end of town. We've been talking with Elizabeth Manning from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you, Charles.
And as I said earlier, you can find out about that and all the other stuff we've been talking about on our website. Go to alaskapublic.org, and you can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public. So stay with us for the second half of the show. We'll continue talking about single-track biking when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 7 p.m. on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime, download podcasts, and see what's coming up on future programs at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfworth, and our topic today is single-track bike trails, especially those new trails that are hillside and at Kincaid Park. More single-track trails being built at Kincaid this summer. And I've got two of the parents, I would guess you could say, of the single-track bike trails in Anchorage. They don't look old enough to be parents, but I guess we can call them that. Lee Bowling and Janice Tower, who are both with the single-track advocacy group. When we went to the break, Janice, we were starting to talk a little bit about how fast you can do this. And I know there's, is there racing taking place on the single track trails? And is that, how does that work?
The Arctic Bike Club Mountain Racing Division has cross-country races out there every other Tuesday night. And I believe the first one is first week of June. Tuesday night races, all are welcome, whether you're experienced or not. And there's different divisions from, they have a junior category, beginning, sport, and expert. So the courses at Kincaid are designed to be entry level. And so no experience necessary. All you need is a bike and a helmet. And they're well marked, and they usually go throughout Kincaid Park on ski trails, on some of the new single track trails, and some of the other little social trail connector trails, what have you. The courses are different every time. So on any given Tuesday night race, you can expect that it'll take you to a different pattern or a different area of the park.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds fun. We'll make sure we have a link to that on the website at alaskapublic.org. So if you're racing on this narrow trail, you can't pass the person ahead of you. How does that work exactly? Do you do it, do you start in stages, or how do you race on such a narrow trail?
Well, they're mass start races. So according to your category, you know, for example, all the beginners will go together, all the sport will go together, and experts. So you'll be kind of racing around people of similar fitness and similar skill level. And on the single track, it is harder to get around. So if you happen to be going behind someone slower than you, you know, the etiquette, you don't want to just scream at them to get out of the way because that's not very nice. But you'll say, hey, you know, whenever you get a chance, you know, coming up behind you. And so if there's an opportunity for that person to pull over some other area where it's a little wider to step off the trail and let you by, you know, that's kind of a nice thing to do for your fellow competitor. And, of course, you can use the single track to your advantage strategically. If, let's say you're not as technically skilled, I guess, to put it that way, sometimes you want to get to the single track or, you know, first, if you think you can get there and at least catch a little bit of a breather in through the woods. And conversely, if you're really good at single track, you want to make sure that you go as fast as you can on the ski trails to get there first so that you don't get behind anybody that's slower than you. So then you have a clear opportunity to go through there quicker.
Well, that seems like that could be if you're blockading somebody, you could use that to your advantage, but that wouldn't be very polite, would it?
Right, yeah. So, yeah, you definitely want to be cognizant of people coming up behind you. But fun thing about the single track is because it's so much fun, you kind of forget you're racing.
Yeah. I found that, you know, the Tuesday night races, foot races out there in the fall, sometimes you'll get on a narrow pathway with hundreds and hundreds of people, and you realize, there's no point in trying to pass here.
Yeah.
You know, it's just impossible. Just like relax and wait till you're out of that area and then try to pass.
You just have to settle in and be patient. But, you know, but that's all part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you really want to fly through there, then you just have to really work hard to get there first so that you're not held up.
So, Lee, you don't do any racing, but you're out there pretty much every day?
Yeah, I'd say every day, every other day.
So. Uh-huh. Do you have this feeling of when you're riding a trail that you've built? I've done a little trail building, and it's cool to go over a trail that you've built and sort of remember what it was like building that. And it's also kind of mind-blowing when you just fly through a trail and realize how long and how hard it was to build, you know, and it's going through sort of the different You must have that experience when you're out there, because you spend a lot of hours out there building these trails, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's a very great feeling to be out there, and I'm just so happy every time I'm on the on the trails, because they're so much fun. And it really makes me excited too, when you hear people in the woods just screaming for joy as they're coming around, just hooting and hollering.
Yeah, everybody you see out there has a big smile on their face, no doubt about it.
Yeah, but I've kind of a curse on me though, because I've been involved with all those trails and have walked all the alignments and been intimately involved with it, I never get lost now.
Oh,
so it's kind of funny, because a lot of people get lost out there, but I always know where the trail's at.
So. I almost always get lost, because you can't. There's so many twists and turns. It's really hard to remember where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some signage, but it's not really to the point where you can totally figure out where you are, especially in that area that is near the paved entrance. You know, near where the road comes in. I think it's called the Tower Trail.
Yeah,
it seems like there's a lot of informal trails that are intersecting, and you know, and I don't mind getting lost as long as I'm not trying to get somewhere on time.
Yep.
So how do you, Janice mentioned it, the first effort was by hand, but then you've realized that's too much work. What kind of equipment do you use to build these trails?
Yeah, so it's a good question. We use mechanized equipment. We use a trail, we've hired a trail builder that uses a Suico, which is a miniature bulldozer, for lack of a better word. And it's got a 4-foot wide actuating blade, and you can move it in all sorts of different directions. And you sit inside of it, and you pretty much kind of bulldoze your way through the trail. Before the mechanized equipment is there, we have the trail laid out. We have flagged it so the trail builder knows where to go. And then the Suico will go through. And Suico does about, I'd say about, I don't know, 70% of the work or so. Okay, and then after that, we have a mini excavator that comes through. And that's kind of a tracked piece of equipment with kind of a backhoe. And it goes around and it really works on the drainage. So in low spots, we kind of dig out areas for water to flow, because we don't want water on the trail. We want water to get off the trail as fast as possible, because that limits erosion and just makes it less muddy. And so, you know, the mini excavator probably does the other, you know, 20%. Maybe 15%, and then the rest of it is done by volunteers doing hand-finished work. So that's where we're going through with Pulaskis and McLeods, which are kind of specialized trail-building tools. And that's when you're actually going through and you're really hand-finishing the trail tread and the bank corners and the jumps, if they're out there, in places that they're out there. So it's really, that's kind of the progression right there. Mm-hmm. So it's the Suico first and the excavator, then the hand-finishing.
But you're not like bringing gravel or putting in culverts or doing or putting down any sort of wood or anything like that. It's all dirt.
Yeah, we want to use the natural materials that are there. We don't want to bring anything in. First of all, that adds more expense, and second is just not as pleasing of a trail if you're bringing in outside material.
Mm-hmm.
We just work with what we have there. We try and be conscious of going into places that have some good soils and that are going to be. They have good drainage around there, stuff like that.
Right. And who's paying for this equipment and doing all this construction work? And how much does it cost?
Yeah, so we have a big fundraising effort. So we get money through grants and donations and private funding. And we're able to raise enough money to pay for a trail builder to do, you know, a lot of the work. And that's one part is the trail builder's cost. But then there's other parts such as, you know, signage, and things of that nature. So, you know, how much did the phase one cost?
That was almost $200,000.
$200,000.
For how many miles?
For 9 miles.
Pretty good deal compared to what most trails cost, but still, yeah. So
for phase two, we're looking for about $116,000.
Uh-huh. And how much have you raised of that? Most of the way?
We're getting pretty close. We're almost there.
So still looking for donations, but you're going to make it.
Yep.
And I assume that that's based on a lot of volunteer labor.
Yep, a lot of volunteers.
Yep.
Are you still looking for people? I mean, so if folks who want to contribute and come out and you know, dig and do physical labor, you still need them?
Definitely. People can donate from our website, singletrackadvocates.org. And starting about a week after trail work begins with mechanized equipment, we'll coordinate and plan some volunteer work crews. And these will happen after night, generally two nights a week. And they can just show up, and we'll have the tools, and we'll teach them safety and trail building techniques. And then we hit the trails, and everybody will get to work on their little segment of trail.
Wow, it actually sounds kind of fun. I know it's a lot of work, but just being out in the woods working and building something positive with a lot of people, probably make new friends. And
yeah, it's really, it's pretty cool because a lot of groups like to go out, you know, like they're with their little club or a work organization. They'll ask, well, hey, can we have our own work night? And they'll, well, yeah, sure. You know, we can meet on a Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. You bring your employees. And so it's a great opportunity for businesses to get their employees involved in a community event. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, they might finish with a barbecue. And so it's pretty cool. I mean, anybody who gets to work on the trails has a sense of ownership. And and then when we have maintenance work sessions, everybody's like pretty excited to come out because they're trained, they know what it's all about, they've ridden the trails, they're having a ton of fun, so they have a great sense of ownership.
Mm-hmm. So what's the timeline for the first set of trails? Seemed like it got built really fast. I mean, I wasn't involved in doing it, so maybe that's why it seemed that way. But what's the timeline for this new trail?
So we're gonna start July 15th. And then hopefully be done by the end of September. So that's kind of for the mechanized work. And then through that process, we'll be doing hand finishing as well. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the timeline right there. You know, timelines definitely can change depending on things that we don't foresee, you know, but that's
2 months. That's pretty quick.
Yep.
Yeah. We're talking about single track bike trails on Outdoor Explorer today. My name is Charles Wolforth. My guests are Lee Bowling and Janice Tower, both of the Single Track Advocacy Group. In the amazing stuff you've accomplished in a decade, really, with all the trails on Hillside, trails at Kincaid, more trails coming into Kincaid, really have changed mountain biking in Anchorage. So good job. But I know that there's also been some controversy. There's some folks who feel like, gosh, Kincaid Park has already got so much in it. You know, do we really want to put more human use into this park? Granted, some of the stuff the Ski Association has done with the new biathlon range and wider trails, probably more intrusive into nature than the single track trails in that they're making still big stuff, construction. But have you had any pushback from folks who feel like, you know, maybe this is too much or maybe the park should be left more the same? I know there's also been some issues about wildlife habitat. There's a lot of moose out there and other conflicts. I don't know who wants to take that, or that's not the fun question. Somebody has to take it.
Yeah, I guess I'll give it a stab. Uh-huh. You know, there have been people that have said, you know, had said that. Not a lot of people, you know, when we did the Parks and Rec commission meeting there, the hearing there was a gentleman that stood up and said that he didn't want us to touch any existing stuff that was already out there. Because he likes it just the way it is. And we're not planning on actually touching any of the existing in the certain area that he was talking about. So that's good there. But, you know, my feeling with Kincaid Park is that, you know, when you get out in the actual swaths of land that aren't no one's has been in yet, I mean, like you said, you get lost out there. I mean, the ski trail could be 20 feet away and you might not be able to see it. So there is still a lot of room out there. Not as much as there was, you know, back in the day, but I feel like there's still plenty of room out there for doing these types of trails. And I think if they're done right and done with good crossings and good visibility, I think it can work really well.
And what about the wildlife issue? I know there were some folks who got hurt last summer by moose. Anything that can be done about that, or is it just sort of slow down and be careful?
Yeah, the moose and wildlife encounters is definitely a thing that, you know, STA is trying to be proactive about. There were encounters that happened out there, but you know, there's really what we're trying to do for this next phase is we're working with the municipality and Jesse Coltrane with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game to figure out a way that we can build a sustainable and fun trail that's also safe. And the way that we're going to try and do that is by really minimizing those blind corners. The blind corners seem to be kind of the culprit in everything because people go fast around them. They might not know what's going on. And that's when the issue happens. It doesn't seem to be an issue when you have good visibility, but it's when you have poor visibility that it's an issue. So
you surprise the moose and it surprises you and suddenly you're right on top of each other.
Yep. And I think, you know, since we did phase one, we didn't really know how fast the trail was going to be when the trail builder was building it out there. And then once it got ridden in and we kind of figured out, okay, this is how fast it is. You know, there is some, you know, spots where you need to be careful and you really need to, you know, be conscious of your actions and slow down around corners that you can't see very well. Mm-hmm. So hopefully in the, you know, next phase, we're going to, you know, really work on making it a safer trail system. But, you know, overall, you know, people need to take, you know, they have their own risk involved. You know, no matter what you do with the trail, there's always going to be, you know, people are going to bike it the way that they want to bike. So
in a way, it's not a super safe sport. I mean, it's like you don't hear about people getting killed mountain biking, but you hear about plenty of people falling off and breaking this or breaking that because you are putting yourself out there. And that's part of the what's fun about it. You know, you don't want to be the nanny state and not making any fun anymore.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's dangers with it. I think even more dangerous than the mountain biking that we do here in Anchorage is the downhill mountain biking. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother level. I mean, when you YouTube, you know, people doing crazy mountain bike stuff, they're doing downhill, huge gap jumps and things like that that we don't have here.
We're not even talking about that.
That's a whole different skill level altogether.
Yeah.
And
so.
But we're working with, you know, Fish and Game, as Lee mentioned, to try to get better public awareness out there about how to recreate around wildlife. I mean, mm-hmm. we are, you know, in Anchorage, an urban center, and people want to get out and have fun. And so the more people know about wildlife and how to conduct yourselves around them, I think is going to improve things. And certainly being cognizant of moose calving season, which occurs between mid-May and about mid-June, maybe third mm-hmm. week of June.
Not a good time to be out there, basically, because they need not to have their space.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and a mama moose is going to defend her calf vigorously, mm-hmm. especially when the calves aren't big enough to move off quickly on their own. That's, I think, when you'll find the cows most aggressive. So, but letting people know that there are inherent risks out there. There's wildlife. How to conduct yourself around wildlife. Try to exercise restraint and stay away from areas mm-hmm. where there's known cows having calves at this time of year. We can all be patient and maybe wait another couple of weeks for that natural process to play out. There's certainly other areas in Kincaid Park that maybe don't have quite the moose density.
They have their sight lines, yeah.
Sure, yeah, and in other areas in Anchorage as well.
Right, and I think the other thing I'd add that I've seen dangerous behavior when people, not only bikers, but also skiers and runners, will come upon a moose and then will say, well, I want to stay on the trail. So they'll just try to get by an animal that might be stressed and might be close to the trail. And so if that happens, you need to turn around and go the other direction or make a wide circle mm-hmm. around it.
Yeah, definitely. Having respect for mm-hmm. the wildlife is important.
Yeah, I got to realize how fast they can move and how much damage they can do.
Yep.
So other seasonal issues, tons of people using it in the wintertime. I think that I'm a hardcore skier and it's out there and it's 5 below and I'm on a lighted trail and I look out and there's some guy who's biking on the single track, you know, it's pitch darkness and below zero. I think, wow, these guys are really hardcore. Tons of people out there in the summertime. Fall is great, you know, when it started to freeze up and the ground is really hard. Spring, maybe not so much. Do you want to keep people off of it in the spring when it's kind of mushy?
Yeah, during breakup, definitely trying to get people to chill a little bit and stay off the muddy trails because that, more than anything, is the thing that damages the tread surface is riding out there before they're dry, when they're muddy and boggy. But, you know, it's pretty difficult to do because people are so excited, you know, and they want to get out there and ride their mountain bikes. But yeah, we have a lot of messages out there. Please just be patient, you know, let these dry weeks like the past week or two, you know, get out there.
But we're getting there, you know, second, third week of June, it should be getting there, right?
Yeah, it's getting really close, definitely. Mm-hmm.
And I think another place to look, not just on our website, but also if you look us up on Facebook, just, you know, search for Single Track Advocates on Facebook. We always have posts there, and that's a quick way to kind of check in on how the trail's doing and, you know, volunteer work parties that are going to be coming up so you can come out and help.
Yeah, great. And we will definitely have that stuff linked at alaskapublic.org and welcome people who have comments about our topic to get on our Facebook page. And I'll make sure Lee and Janice are aware of it and they can be responding to your comments and answering them. We'll make it as interactive as possible. Just a great sport. I just really thank you guys for doing this. I think it's such an exciting thing about Anchorage that people are going out and we don't have bike trails. Oh, let's go out and build some, you know? And it seems like it's been a great positive thing for you guys personally. Yes?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're doing this for selfish reasons, right?
Yep.
Well, you get to bike on the trails, but you also, you accomplish something pretty important, pretty major, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible to think about. Just a few short years ago, we didn't have any of this resource out there. And, you know, all we had to ride on were some ski trails and a few little social trails through the woods. So, more people are out biking, having a good time, and we're glad because we have people to ride with.
Right. Yeah, or going up into the Chugach, I guess. That would have been the other option.
Yeah.
Well, so after this project is done, we just have a little time left. Do you have another project on the horizon?
No other projects on the horizon right now.
But we have ideas.
We have ideas, though.
Uh-huh. So. Do you guys have meetings, and if people want to get involved in your group, they can, you know, I mean, I know you've got a website. They can come to fundraisers and stuff like that.
We have, they're generally involving some social activity,
okay.
like a ride.
I hear you.
Come ride with us, and we'll talk trails. Communities begin to see what resources mountain bikers have been able to bring to their own communities. We're getting excited because I'm getting feedback from other locations, other neighborhoods that would like to see a resource in their area too. So that's really exciting to me.
Well, thanks guys. It's Janice Tower and Lee Bowling, Single Track Advocacy Group. We've been talking about the bike trails in Anchorage. Next week, our topic is aviation, in particular, weekend pilots who fly for the fun of it. Flying is a deeply ingrained part of Alaska's way of life, and that's because it's the best way to get to the vast majority of our state. We'll talk to pilots who access the outdoors at the controls of their own airplanes. If you have questions or thoughts on this topic, please help us build the show. I'll ask for your questions on the air. You can contact us on Facebook. That's all for Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Our producer is Kristen Speck. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to alaskapublic.org.